This is Antoine Marot. He's the lead AI scientist at RTE. So we have two talks here from people who are actively in industry and thinking about how to make AI something that is really real and actually working with real customers. So we heard of Thomas' work with IBM, and Antoine will talk about RTE, and we've started doing a project together, so, but we're not gonna talk so much about that. It's actually good for me, because I'll get to find out about all the other stuff that you do. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Wendy, for the introduction. And so yeah, I'm from RTE, so that's a French power grid operator. And now I will talk about this work we've been trying to develop. Of course, we have not reached any true human-computer partnership yet, but we'd like to develop such an AI assistant for power grid operator. But let me start with a rather simple question, which might not be obvious, you know, when you're just using electricity. Is electricity a 20th century solved challenge? So you might be aware that we still have some challenges such as climate change, and we need to decarbonize the systems, the energy system. So we need to integrate more renewables, etc. But besides that, you know, just to get electricity at your home place, is there any more challenge for that? Because the grid is there, you turn on the switch, the light is on. So. And basically, the underlying question can be, are blackouts a story of the past? And when you realize that we still have those control rooms full of human operators, you wonder, wow, I didn't know about that. There's still a human behind the switch, basically. And those control rooms, we have about 8 of them in France today. And as you can see, those are large rooms with synoptics, large desks for operators to have many, many applications where they will get some information, some forecast, study tools to make decisions. So this seems still quite a complex work environment, and near real time, they still have to manage the grid. So to ensure that there's a good balance between production and consumption, and to ensure that lines don't get overloaded, which could cause a cascading failure and a blackout. So this is today, and we expect it to get even worse tomorrow for them because the complexity keeps rising. As I said, we're in the energy transition, basically, so we're trying to integrate a lot more solar and renewable farms at the local level. We also have consumers who are becoming a lot more active because you can have a solar panel on your rooftop, you can have a battery, an electric vehicle, so you can either take electricity out of the system or inject into the system. So that's at the local level, but also at the continental level, all the power grids were developed nationally in the past are now all getting interconnected to have a world European system, and then you have very particular phenomena that can emerge from that. So that's basically around the grid, but the grid itself is also changing in nature. So we have some hybridization of technologies such as alternative current, which was there, with direct current, which is kind of reviving. We have this digitization of the system, which brings some new opportunities, but also challenges. We also have a hard time to build new lines. So in the past, it was very convenient because we were expanding the grids. People were not quite pissed off to have a line in their garden, let's say. But today, it's not possible anymore. So we have to do with the grid we have and probably to use more flexibility out of it. And finally, we have also some more automation, so distributed automata that the operators will have to deal with. And so, yeah, this is a paper where we explain all of that, what is changing, and this has some operational impacts. So as we cannot expand the grid, the lines will get more congested, we'll have less operating margin. We also have higher operational uncertainty or unpredictability because renewable resources are intermittent. We cannot really control them. So this brings some uncertainty. we'll have a fast evolution of the system dynamics, because the energy transition, if you read this nice report from RT, Energy Pathways to 2050, there are about 6 different scenarios that we present. But the take-home message is, whatever the scenario we choose, we should act now. We should integrate more renewables. We should add more flexibility, etc. So this will just continue up to 2050 and change the dynamics of the system. And also, as I said, we have a new multi-scale coordination problem to address. So we think that given those operational impacts, there are operational needs, which are more grid flexibility and higher order decision-making capability. So that's what we want to try to address. And answering my first, let's say, simple question, are blackouts of the past a story of the past? Not really. This could happen again tomorrow. And we think the first piece of work that we needed to work on are about rethinking the human-machine interfaces. So here is a quick timeline and sketch of the evolution of the control room over time. So we started to have control rooms after World War II, let's say, where many, almost all processes were manual, so operators were switching on and off big breakers on the grid, etc. And then, given computers, so some new compute powers, we could develop some software, some study tools for them. There were also some automation in the grid, because some phenomena can be very fast. So definitely, power grids are big artificial systems that we need to control. And up to nowadays, as you've seen, they have many, many applications. Each time we have a new problem, we bring a new application, a new screen, and it's getting quite crowded. And there hasn't been too much of an integration of this ecosystem. So we're in a big, heavy supervision mode, and we think that might not scale up anymore. One track of research we have is to maybe switch from supervision that you see here, so many screens, on every screen an application, so a different kind of information. And somehow the operator has to monitor that all the time to try to anticipate when he sees some weird information somewhere, what's happening, and to also connect the dots, so to really comprehend the situation and to make a decision afterwards. So this is becoming quite cognitively intensive. And what we think is that maybe we could try to move to a new kind of approach that is called hypervision, that comes from aeronautics, where the idea is more not to display every information we have, but really trying to deliver, to provide the right information at the right time to the right operator. So of course, this is not easy. And the idea here is not to replace every application you see here, but rather to have them running in the background and trying to have this kind of master of puppets trying to define what might be the task that the operator might have to deal quite soon. And so we have a first implementation of that in this framework, Operator Fabric, which is open source within the Linux Foundation. And if we just grab a snapshot of it, the idea is that it should be the same kind of interface for every operator, but then personalized to, of course, the array of the grids they have to operate or the kind of operations they have to manage. But the key idea here is to have this feed of cards, each card corresponding to a certain task. And ideally, we'd like to have this prioritized. So either prioritized by some algorithms or maybe by the operator himself, but some feed. And when you click on a card, then you get some more context about the task, what maybe the problem is about, and maybe some recommendations of what could be possible or not. And then an operator can decide, okay, if that happened, I will do that, and then the hypervision system will kind of handle that for some time, except if something changes, the decision, the option is not as effective as before, or maybe the context is different and we have to revise the decision. But basically, we also want that to anticipate, to pre-configure basically the future with anticipation, and to get more time in case of emergency, something that we didn't really plan for. At least, you know, you have your near future that is kind of handled, and you can focus on this more emergency task. And this way, we want to fight this infobesity kind of thing, so this sea of information therein, and to refocus the operator, so change the focus from alarm monitoring to task completion. And so here is a projection for, let's say, the next decade, if we go along that way, where we'll get this more integrated ecosystem of application with a more unified interface, and where also operators can more easily share information, so tasks. And the idea, as you can see, is to get a longer scope, temporal scope, to anticipate things so that in real time there's almost no more to be done if things go as we configured them, or we can really refocus on the emergency when it's the case. So let me talk now about one of the main tasks of our operators, so controlling the power flows. So here is a very simple illustration of a small grid. So on this grid, you have some production, some consumptions that are changing over time. And as they change, the flows on the line change. And lines have some physical capacity. You cannot go above a certain power flow because then you have some security problems. And so for security reasons, if you do nothing basically and your line is overloaded, you disconnect the line with protections. That's what you see here at some point. But then the problem is not solved. You know, the energy does not disappear. So other lines get loaded, they might get overloaded, and then you might get a cascading failure and a blackout. And so this is part of a synthetic environment and testbed we've developed to study the robust operation of a power grid near real time with some operational constraints. So I will come back to that later. But again, trying to decompose this task, so task, congestion management task, so really, the fear of an operator is to get this line overloaded and not be able to find any solutions to solve it. So this is kind of a typical problem-solving and decision-making task where you first try to anticipate what kind of, let's say, contingencies, so some lines that might unexpectedly disconnect because of a lightning on the grid might create some overloads. So you screen for that, you anticipate that. Then if you identify some risky contingencies, you try to find some solutions or remedial actions. And then if that ever happened, you need to take a decision. You might have several options with some trade-off, but yeah, you have to take that decision. Looking at the same kind of task, but over time with actually several problems to coordinate with. So here, let's say you have an operator that starts his shift and monitoring the grid at 7 a.m. So the grid is decomposed into two areas. And you have some forecasts that are available for the next hours, and that shows possibly two issues. So in the first area, you might encounter a problem around 9 a.m. given a contingency. And right now, we anticipate that we already know that there might be three corrective actions that are available. In the other part of the grid, there might be another kind of problems that might arise also around 8:30, 9 a.m. And there, you only have one preventive action. So for that, you cannot wait for the problem to occur because you need some time for your action to be effective, and you have to decide in the next minutes to take it or not. And so this makes already kind of a, interesting decision-making problem of a task. So for instance, here you might wonder which decision of priority, when should we implement those action, how does applying a preventive action on one area might translate and impact the other area, what kind of coordination might be required, and which of the three corrective actions in area one should be taken. Maybe there could be also other solutions that we could explore. So those are the kind of questions, you know, an operator might explore. And so what can we do also for them using AI? So there is this nice saying from Andrew Ng, so a famous professor at Stanford University: artificial intelligence is a new electricity. So that's kind of a metaphor. For us, it tells us that electricity was kind of a big deal in the past century. Now it's less trendy. But maybe there could be a nice connection between those two. That's what I'm trying to say. So how can AI be of any help here for assisting the operator and working, for instance, with hypervision? And we started first, let's say, rather simple and straightforward, because our operators are using a lot of physical simulators to take decisions or to train themselves. And one way was to try to augment them. So again, this congestion management task, and you have to understand that behind every of those computations today runs a physical simulator to compute the state of the grid in different kind of scenarios. And as I mentioned early on, we're getting more uncertainties, etc. So tomorrow, to anticipate the risk, we'll have to explore a lot more scenarios. And this is at least an increase in 1,000 time computation for tomorrow. So somehow one way to address that is to accelerate a bit the computation. So here is a typical simulation where, again, you have productions, conceptions, and the grid topology, so how the lines are connected to one another. And the simulation is basically computing those power flows. And they can do that in a study tool that you can see here. So that's how it's computed. Today it's computed with typical numerical solver applying some optimization formulation, so very explicit optimization formulation. But yeah, the trade-off is that you recompute from scratch. There is no memory for those kind of approaches. So with the rise of machine learning and deep learning, new approaches also emerged. So you have this one, the LeapNet, for instance. So that's a neural network that is trying to mimic the physical solver with some generalization properties that are interesting. And another approach is to devise a new kind of solver with graph neural networks. So those work we investigated, and we're pursuing in this project hybridization of learning and simulation at Saclay with ERT Systemics. And we'll see, but that gave us some new possible trade-offs that unlock some new possibilities to couple machine learning with physical simulators. So this hybridization, for instance, help us to either get more speed or more accuracy. So if you're trying to assess the risk, there's a lot of uncertainty, so you might not want to have a very, very accurate result on one state because you're exploring many states of the grid. But when you're taking a decision, you want to validate your decision with all possible guarantees. And there, for instance, a physical solver might still be the best option at the cost of computation. So that was the first assistance function that integrates well with the tools they already have. But could we go somehow a step further? Can we go towards an AI assistant here? So the needs for an assistant, we hope an assistant can help augment the operator's decision-making capability by addressing First, so this more rapidly evolving and changing system environment. So today's our operators are trained, let's say once and for all, but a very intense training, but tomorrow they might need to retrain a lot more because the behavior is changing. Also help address more numerous, complex, and coordinated decisions. As we mentioned, also more uncertainty to consider and so more anticipation needed. This problem of infobesity and fragmented work environment. And finally, also their human operator cognitive load saturation. But an assistant can be maybe an opportunity, but it also can come with some pitfalls. Obviously, we mentioned a lot already today, so de-skilling and over-reliance. As I said, our operators are highly trained. They need to develop their own mental models and strategies, and they need to still be able to do that in more complex situations. The problem of perverse instantiation, so the machine might have some incomplete objective or incomplete information, or the objective might change, as we mentioned. So we need to make sure that the human values and operations are aligned with what the machine is intending to do. There's also this temptation of anthropomorphizing the assistant. So we're not really looking for an assistant that really looks like a human, such as an avatar or stuff like that. We should be careful with that. And the idea is to find those complementary capabilities between those two. And finally, the operator should be able to communicate with it and to instruct it, either to make some correction or to take over, so that's important. Given what I said, initial scope for such an assistant for us, what we're experimenting with, is this, let's say, recommender system where AI could provide timely alerts with confidence measure and context for recommendations of actions for congestion management. Of course, there will still be some new cases, some new situation we have not found before, some atypical cases. In that case, operators need other kind of tools and to run maybe some remedial action exploration, possibly with some form of AI as well, but maybe a different one before choosing a new solution. We'd like it to learn from operator preferences and also the newly devised solutions. And this needs to have some properties because this is a safety critical system. So robustness is very important. So it should be robust to attacks, contingencies, etc. in the context of this more complex cyber physical system. And that's something we try to describe in this paper we'll present at the Hybrid Human AI conference next month. Having that said, then we need to find some way to start implementing things, to have some kind of framework. So we mentioned Daniel Kahneman before. In his seminal book 10 years ago, he comes with this cognition system that is decomposed into two imaginary agents. For human cognition, where he says, okay, our cognition works with, let's say, system one, which is more about dealing with usual situations and habits that relies a lot on perception and experience, that works with pattern recognition, and basically is kind of similar to intuition. So a very fast system that can make some interesting predictions. And also system two layer, which is more about problem solving. So somehow you have a new situation you have not really solved before. You know, you need to reason about it, to have some deliberation, some thinking, and it's more about deduction. And those two systems somehow work together, and system two is kind of costly. It requires you some more cognition. So given this human cognition, so it's a model, of course, it's not perfect, but maybe we could try to address to help addressing and supporting those two systems. Trying to sketch some modules behind them. So we think that AI today and machine learning, which is kind of the realm of pattern recognition, basically, can definitely bring some assistance at the system one layer. So it's about learning, it's about encoding or generating some rules, studying some scenarios, taking into account human preferences. But then when it comes to new situations, you need some interaction, definitely a lot more interactions to iteratively converge towards a solution. You might need some, let's say, explanation or way to interpret what's going on and to understand how confident you might be or not with that kind of solution. So that's the idea. That's a framework we're trying to develop also in this project at ERT Systemics, smart cockpit and bidirectional assistant. And let's say here is kind of the status of those developments. So nothing is done yet for sure, but we're trying to investigate, for instance, learning, so learning preferences, trying to generate some scenarios that make sense and that you can work with for anticipation. Trying also to make things interpretable for the human operator to better understand a given state of the grid, and also the ideas of a continuous performance improvement. On the top, you have this blue layer, which is the interface, basically. So here I put the AI provisions that I talked about before. And so in orange, those are the things we've been starting to work on. In red are the things that are still very much open, especially those, let's say, bidirectional interactions that would be needed when things are a bit unexpected and where the human operator has the most value today. Just also a quick overview of the actual work we've been doing with AI. We've been trying to provide some new kind of visualization of the grid, so to segment the grid so that the operator can figure out what are the kind of coherent areas they can first focus on to solve a problem and then maybe look at the grid at large. So that's something they've been doing a bit, but in a static way. Every year they kind of define some grid areas that kind of make sense for them. But since things are getting more dynamic and more contextual, we try to provide this kind of function. I talk about learning the physical simulation for risk assessment. We've also developed an adaptive expert system that provides also an interpretable representation for them. So it's based on concepts they have, basically electrical paths where it makes sense to push the flows and pull the flows if you have an overload. And so what's interesting there is that, okay, this expert system can provide some recommendation, but of course it will not be perfect. And they can go further. They can take the representation and say, okay, but I would have tried to play with that flexibility here. Another kind of work is about, let's say, continuous improvement, gaining some new knowledge. So let's say you have a database of historical situations. Here you add daily consumption profiles. And you want to understand which ones are similar or not. And once you have such a projection, you want to understand why such a cluster of situation is similar. What is the underlying factor? And for instance, for consumption profile, you could detect that on some days it was very, you had a snowstorm in part of the in part of France, and this had definitely an impact on the electrical consumption. And then you learn that, okay, we should account for this factor when we make forecast or take decision later. Another work is about learning physically consistent and humanly guided explainable features. So what I mean by that is, again, you have a line that is overloaded, and you might want to understand why Is it overloaded somehow? Is it because of this production, this conception, this topology of the grid? So trying to explain this overloaded flow by some variables, but in a physically consistent manner, so that the units should be consistent, and it is kind of an equation in the end that can be read by the operator and that kind of fits what they're used to do. And finally, we talk about recommendation. So we're exploring imitation or reinforcement learning for action recommendations. But of course, those algorithms kind of run in the background, and to study them, we need some interfaces and that come in different flavors. So first interface is grid to game. It allows you basically to run to emulate the real-time decision-making. So a scenario, every 5 minutes, you get a new snapshot, you take a decision, and this can be played either by us, human, or by the AI, or in combination. So that's an interesting interface to study a bit this partnership in the future. Also, you have this other interface that lets you explore the flexibilities around the scope of possible flexibilities a lot quickly, so it's kind of a study tool. And finally, we have this other interface, Grid2Viz, which is more for a posteriori behavior analysis, to understand what went well in a scenario or not, what kind of actions were interesting, which one were maybe to revise and to learn in that fashion. Finally, in terms of implementation, we have this underlying testbed framework. So we talk about reinforcement learning. This time it's more about the AI formulation, where you have this agent that interact with its environment. So the power system for us doing some action, then it gets some observation of the new state of the grid with some signal about how good or not its action was. And you see again the same problem. If you get an overload, okay, what can I do? If I do what we call a node splitting here action, then the overload is relieved and you get a better reward. And here we consider a time resolution of 5 minutes because that's the resolution human operators work with today. And so the framework behind that is this one, Grid Alive. So there's this core framework, Grid2Op, which basically is a testbed that enables us to run scenarios, so decision-making scenarios, emulate that. It's managing the data, so the scenarios that it's getting from somewhere else. It is interacting with a physical simulator to still be able to provide the observation. And then an agent, so either an artificial agent or a human operator, can take a decision, and this is looping over the scenario. And in the end, you can either look at the result of your scenario in your study tool or in a benchmark with some evaluation criteria. And this testbed, we've been developing that along international competitions, so more for the AI community, where we started with a small grid that you saw previously, and then we scaled up the complexity by adding some new kind of events, such as maintenance. And then we're looking for the agents to have some properties, so, such as robustness. So if you have an attackant in the grid that kind of disconnect lines unexpectedly, are you still robust to that to operate the grid? Or if you're changing the energy mix, so adding more renewables, can your agent, so this artificial agent, adapt at least a bit to this? And here you see one such grid where the agent is taking some decisions. So you see the green and orange dots over time because at the beginning of the scenario, you had a line disconnecting on top and then you had some overload, so some lines in red, and then you have to take some decisions. And on this play, it was quite impressive because sometimes it kind of combined 3 to 4 actions. So it's not very easy to do. So that shows some potential, but yet on those weekly scenarios, at 5 minute resolution, even the best participant will still fail in about 30% of the scenarios. So here's basically the picture. We started with a baseline that was about 50%, reached about 50% of operational performance, so the number of scenarios it succeeds at. And then they've been improving, let's say, to 70%, maybe in the window we were talking about before. But, I mean, you will not trust such an autonomous agent, right? So really, for us, we don't believe that we can, maybe if it was, you know, 99.999% reliable, you would trust it and let it work it out. But we think we're still very far from that. And our aim is more at developing an assistant for that. And that's what we started to emphasize in our last competition, L2RPN with Trust, where we also added the objective for the agent to alert someone, so let's say an operator tomorrow, when this agent is unsure, not confident about its action. And alerting not just before the grid collapse, but ahead of time as well. So we devise such a score. And also we ask this agent to kind of localize where on the grid he thinks the problem will appear. And so then that brings us this new dimension of predicting failure rate, where now maybe we can build some more trustworthy kind of models. Because, okay, it's not perfectly handling the grid, but at least when it knows that it's out of its domain of knowledge, out of its capability, it lets the user know, okay, now you should be paying a lot more attention because I might not be able to make good recommendations. And so that's what we've been trying to explore lately. Also, I've been reading this paper actually this year, which kind of displays the same philosophy. I mean, it's more generic. I'm very happy to have found that from Ben Schneiderman, but where we're saying, okay, for quite some time, we've been trying to trade off human control and computer automation along that one dimension. But what if we could just have those two dimensions? Both maybe more automation because the system such as a power grid is getting more complex, but yet still a high level of human control. And so basically this is kind of related to the diagram I showed just before. Finally, last but not least, as you've seen, I've had more, let's say, an AI-centric point of view, even if we're still trying to develop things to augment the operator capabilities, but what about switching gear and using participatory design approaches from Wendy and its team? So here the idea is we want to make the end user an active participant of the whole design process from the beginning and not, let's say, mainly at the evaluation stage, which is often our case. We want to discover needs in situ from its whole activity and not, let's say, only on isolated tasks. And the idea is more to develop interactive digital tools rather than a specific new application software. And so Wissal is doing a PhD with Wendy on this topic. So I take credit from her for this nice sketch. But here now you're looking at the overall control room. And so now you have to consider that you have several operators that are working also as a team. You have other kind of activities such as the next day forecast office, the next week planning office. And they all need to exchange information and work together. And so we'll quickly take a look at those two fictitious characters, Charles and Julie, who are dispatchers. So those were personas that were devised. And Charles is more a senior dispatcher. He likes to transmit knowledge. He's doing that easily. He prefers to solve problems using its experience rather than simulation. And Julie is rather a junior dispatcher, so different level of expertise. It's her first professional experience, and she's very organized and methodical. And so we've been running some participatory workshop series with dispatchers in Nantes, and we've been trying to build some realistic scenarios for them, but really with the specifics of the activity. And so here is just a quick snapshot. The scenario is more complex, but here it's about a wind peak that might happen in the afternoon. Around 10 a.m., Charles, who is in charge at this time, gets a notification of this wind peak that might cause some troubles, some congestions, and ideally you should be able to study it to prepare the work for Julie. But unfortunately, at 11 a.m., he realizes that he will not have time to do it. He's very busy, very intense day today. But he has to remember to tell her, obviously, at the brief. At noon, Julie arrives for the shift and the brief. Charles is still finishing to deal with some urgent matter, and then starts the brief. And he has so many information to share with Julie that somehow he forgot to mention the wind peak. So Julie is taking over Charles, and at 1 p.m. she's just realizing that she will have to deal with this wind peak in an hour now. So this is becoming very urgent, and she needs help. She asks her manager, and her manager finds also an operator that is somehow available to help her run the study. The other operator finds a remedial action, share it with Julie, and then at around 1:50, the wind rises and creates a congestion. Julie tries to apply the remedial action, but it's not as effective as expected because they were a bit in a rush. So an automatic safety measure has to be triggered, and Julie will have to write a full report to justify that. So that's kind of a piece of activity they have. And as you can see, there's a lot of event information that is possibly not well captured, tracked, and easily reused. So the idea here, given such a scenario, will be to create an interactive object to capture those events, be able to share them with different operators in a meaningful and reusable way. So here is the idea of the object. In the first place was to have this kind of interactive timeline. So you see the timeline here, and you see those events with the information there that can be accessed. So this is work in progress, and an extension could be to augment this tool capability interaction with AI in the future. And this is to be continued. So please talk to Wissal to learn more about it. Right now, she's in the process of prototyping. But there has been a lot already done, such as video prototyping and a lot of workshops with the operators. To conclude, I'd like to mention again Ben Schneiderman. He published this book recently, and he has this description of two tracks of research. One is more about the emulation goal, what it calls, could be another name, but let's say it's more the AI side trying to mimic intelligence, develop kind of autonomous agent, etc. Rather than on the other side, application goal is more about empowering users, developing tools, developing control centers, etc. And he believes that the designs of tomorrow will take the best of those two worlds combined. And so I presented this framework, which is maybe more on the left side. I talk about the work we're doing with Wendy and Wissal, which is more on the right side. And so the idea is both to develop some new capabilities with AI that could be used possibly then through very interesting interactions to augment humans and to help them in their real-world activity. And with that said, thank you.